Lucy Tapajanso is originally from Shiprock, New Mexico, is now a professor at the University of Arizona. She has also taught at the University of New Mexico and the University of Kansas in Lawrence. She's the author of two children's books, including The Navajo ABC, A Diné Alphabet, and Songs of Shiprock Fair, and five books of poetry, including, most recently, Blue Horses Rush In, Poems and Stories, which won the Mountains and Plains Booksellers Association Award in 1998. Among her honors are the 1998 Kansas Governor's Art Award and Distinguished Woman Awards from the National Association of Women in Education and the Girl Scout Council. Lucy Tapajanso is one of the most distinguished voices in American poetry, and a very bright light in the constellation of new writing from American Indian people that we have had the privilege to celebrate in the past decade or so. To say she is a poet, in a way, diminishes the reach of her work. She is a captivating and often comic storyteller, a lyric singer, a thoughtful witness of contemporary and ancient culture, and of how those two strands of being can continue to coexist in us. A task she fulfilled so memorably in writing about the Hohokamki village that was destroyed to build an expressway in Phoenix. And I rely on Lucy to be a teacher. One educates the heart to take nourishment from the essentials of our shared humanity. And that harmony of being present for one another feels so natural and easy in her work, as simple as sitting down together for a cup of coffee. Please welcome Lucy Tapajanso.
Good evening. Diet not aninez, et nasha, twitic ocean schlido, twitic eating bashish chin, desh cheatney the shiche, okinfly cheatney the shinale. I'm originally from Shiprock, New Mexico, and I've just told you what my clans are. I'm twitic ocean, and I'm born for twitic eatney. My grandparents are desh cheatney, they're Shiche is originally from Rock Point. Though Shinale'e, they're from Red Rock around Oak Springs. They're Kintla Cheatney, they're Red House. I'm going to begin this evening reading a poem called Sha'akuta Chinitle. I want to thank all of you for coming. It's really a wonderful feeling to see all of you here. As you know, we just moved here, July, and the welcome to Tucson has really been something. I want to thank the Poetry Center for asking me to read this evening. I'm very honored to do so. I want to also thank American Indian Studies for all the support they've given me, not just this year, but for many years in various things, as well as the College of Humanities and the English Department, where I have a number of very good friends for a number of years. And the university has also been very gracious. President Likens has is a really warm and caring person. We are honored to that he has come out and welcome us to Tucson. That's what they do at home when people come home or when you come to a new community. They come out and welcome you and eat for you. So we've really been eating a lot in Tucson. The community of Tucson has also been very generous. So here I see. This is a poem called Shan Kuda Jinitle. Remember the things they told us. One, before this world existed, the holy people made themselves visible by becoming the clouds, sun, moon, trees, bodies of water, thunder, rain, snow, and other aspects of this world we live in. That way, they said, we would never be alone. So it is possible to talk to them and pray, no matter where we are and how we feel. We are their little ones. Two, since the beginning, the people gone outdoors at dawn to pray. The morning light, a dindi, represents knowledge and mental awareness. With the dawn come the holy ones who bring blessings and daily gifts because they are grateful when we remember them. Three, when you were born and took your first breath, different colors and different kinds of wind entered through your fingertips and the whirl on top of your head. Within us as we breathe are the light breezes that cool a summer afternoon. Within us the tumbling winds that precede rain. Within us sheets of hard thundering rain. Within us dust-filled layers of wind that sweep in from the mountains. To see this blow on your hand now. Each sound we make evokes the power of these winds, and we are at once gentle and powerful. Four, think about good things when preparing meals. It is much more than physical nourishment. The way the cook or cooks think and feel become a part of the meal. Food that is prepared with careful thought, contentment, and good memories tastes so good and nurtures the mind and spirit as well as the body. Once, my mother chased me out of the kitchen because it is disheartening to think of eating something cooked by an angry person. That was when I was a teenager. Five. Be careful not to let your children sit or play on tables or countertops. Not only is it bad manners, but they might have to get married far sooner than you would ever want. Six, don't cut your own hair or anyone else's after dark. There are things that come with the darkness that we have no control over. It's not clear why this rule exists, but so far, no one is willing to become the example of what happens to someone who doesn't abide by it. This is called Yes, It Was My Grandmother, and this is for Shanale, my father's mother. He was also a very renowned weaver. Yes, it was my grandmother. Yes, it was my grandmother who trained wild horses for pleasure and pay. People knew of her saying, she knows how to handle them. Horses obey that woman. She worked, skirts flying, hair tied secure, wind and dust. She rode those animals hard and was thrown time and time again. She worked until they were meek and wanting to please. She came home at dusk, tired and dusty, smelling of sweat and horses. She couldn't cook, my father said, smiling. Your grandmother hated to cook. Oh, Grandma, who freed me from cooking. Grandma, you must have made sure I met a man who doesn't want to share the kitchen. I am small like you and do not protect my careless hair from wind or rain. It tangles often, Grandma, and it is wild and untrained. This is a poem, Sestina for all of you English majors and for people who might be thinking of taking my class. A Sestina, as you may know, is a poem. It's an Italian form. It's a poem of sixes, and it has six stanzas. It uses six words which repeat in a certain form at the end of each line, and the ending word of each stanza is the last word of the first line of the next stanza. I really like this form. I particularly like combining Navajo and English. I think it's a real gift to know more than one language. This is a poem that's called The Canyon is Serene, and you'll see that it's really a song in that it, once you begin writing in this form, it sort of off on its own. You don't know what's going to happen. So this was a surprise for me in many ways. And in fact, I had to go back after I was maybe in the third stanza and fix the first two because the poem did something that I didn't expect. It's called The Canyon was Serene. And as I said, it's a poem of sixes. Tonight, as the bright moon fills the bed, I am certain that I can't rise and face the dawn. Dreams of Chin Li and the mountains urge me to drive back to the res. My family knows why I left, but my husband's gentle horses must wonder where he went. Since it happened, there has been no way to weave this loneliness and the quiet nights into that calm state called Huja. Maybe it doesn't exist. These days, it makes me sad and jealous that some Navajos really live by Huja. Yes, I am jealous of how the old ways actually work for them. They wake, rise, and pray each morning knowing they are blessed. For me, the beauty way is abstract most of the time. At dawn, I rush out and drive to work instead of praying outside. They say we should weave these ancient ways into our daily lives. Do you remember the horses his mother gave at our wedding? They're traditional people and brought horses to my family. Such strong and exquisite animals. We heard that people were jealous, but we dismissed it. Back then, I rode horses for hours, used to weave until sunset each day. Once we went camping in Canyon de Chelly. The moonrise was so bright we could see tiny birds in the brush. The four-wheel drive got stuck in the sand, and two guys helped push it out. That night, the beauty of the old canyon, the moon, and the surprise rescue proved that the beauty the elders speak of does exist. Late that night, a small herd of wild horses came to our camp. They circle and sniff the worn-out four-wheel drive. It smelled of gas and sweat. The canyon was serene. It's easy to be jealous of the people who live there. How much more substantial the sunrise blessing seen there. During those summers not long ago, it was easy to weave story and many others like it into my rugs. Back then, I used to weave and pray, weave and sing. The rhythm of the batten comb meant that beauty was taking form. Nights like that and his low laughter made my rugs rise evenly in warm, delicate designs. Once I wove the colors of his horses into a saddle blanket. He teased me and said that my brother would be jealous because I had not made him one. Sometimes memories of his riding song drive me to tears. Whatever happened to that saddle blanket? Once on a drive to Albuquerque, the long red mesas and smooth cliffs showed me how to weave them into a rug. I was so happy. Here I was sometimes frustrated and jealous of weavers who seemed to live and breathe designs. I learned that beauty can't be forced. It comes on its own. It's like the silky sheen of horses on cool summer mornings. It's like the small breezes, the sway and rise of an Appaloosa's back. Back then, we drove sheep home in the pure beauty of Chinle Valley twilight. Will I ever weave like that again? Our fine horses and tender love cause jealousy. He's gone. From his grave, my tears rise. I want to read story that I remembered when I was here in Tucson some years ago. I've been fortunate in that this university has been asking me to become a part of the university for some time. And one year, one spring, I was here, and you know, when you're interviewing for a job, you go out to dinners and receptions and all this. So there's a lot of people in the English department with whom I'm good friends, and we were supposed to go out to dinner, and they're supposed to ask me questions about what I would teach and how would I do this and that. But instead, we just started telling stories. And I guess it's okay that I say this now that I'm actually here. So we were telling car stories, and we had a really, really good time. And this was one of the stories that I told, and they were telling me, have you written this story down? Asked me if I had written it down, and I hadn't. So I did, and it's called I Remembered This One in Tucson. It's about a car. When I lived in Albuquerque, I was going to my part-time job at the bookstore across from the university campus one afternoon. My friend Nita offered to drop me off on her way home. I didn't know she meant that, literally. She had just bought a new used convertible and was so excited when she was able to purchase it. She had had her eye on it for months and had even lit candles at church, hoping she could get it. Nita and I were good friends. We had both married young and had our older children about the same time, life-changing events occurring in quick succession. For years, we both struggled to attend classes, pay daycare bills, and dress ourselves and our kids and ourselves decently. So money was one thing there was never enough of. Anyway, it felt good when Nita finally saved enough money to buy the car she really wanted, the one she had dreamt about, neither an affordable little compact that got great mileage, nor a sturdy car her parents gave her when they bought a larger luxury car. True, it was a used car, but Carmen Ghia's weren't made anymore. A classic, we kept saying to each other. It was beautiful, a shiny orange body and creamy leather top. The price was good, and at the time we didn't consider the condition of the engine or that sort of thing. We went to the car lot during between classes and simply looked at the car. We ran our hands over the leather interior and imagined driving up the winding roads to Sandia Crest with the top down. Do you think I should? She asked me 100 times when she finally had the total amount. Of course, you deserve it, I said. Not to mention, I deserve to have a friend with a convertible. We decided not to tell our husbands because we wanted to surprise them. We felt sure they would be happy and proud. After she bought it, the car drove like a dream. Her words, I followed her back to campus, and nothing out of the ordinary happened. It drove well that evening when her family saw it for the first time. Her husband wasn't exactly ecstatic. Instead, he said things like, you mean you paid the sticker price? Did you try offering less? How could I, Nita said. That's the price it said, so that's what I paid. Over the years, we've become smarter in these matters. Beginning the next week, the car became unpredictable. Nita drove the car half-time, and the rest of the time, it was in an auto mechanic's garage. We found out quickly that a classic car's repair bills hovered near heaven somewhere. I lent Nita some money, but my husband said it wasn't our responsibility. But I was there the whole time, I said. I told her she deserved a car like that. She does, he said. So we had yard sales and sold whatever we found in the remote corners of our homes at the flea market. I couldn't believe how expensive the reaps were, but we kept telling each other that after the breaks were done, it would be a long time before they go out again. But after the breaks were replaced, the transmission needed work. It seemed like it would never end. Their insurance was high, too. Nevertheless, we remained optimistic that come summer we'd be cruising the Duke City and Santa Fe in the cute orange convertible, our kids tucked in the back seat. The afternoon, Juanita offered me the ride to the bookstore. I got in, and it was so cool. The top was down, and it was a bright spring day. I leaned back and looked at the turquoise sky as Nita was talking. Then in the middle of everything, she said, oh, I meant to tell you that once this car starts, I can't stop it. If I stop, it won't start again. What? I murmured, trying to comprehend what this meant. Oh, it's really no problem, she said. I'll drop you off in the alley behind the store rather than on Central. She paused. I already thought this through. No problem. Okay, she continued. I'll slow down real slow so that you can just get out. I've practiced this. I'll drive so slow that it'll seem like I'm stopped. But of course I won't be. Well, okay, I said. I could see there was no other way. Besides, I needed to get to work. We drove through the alley, and Nita told me to throw my shoes and purse out first. They might weigh you down when you jump, she said. She drove as slowly as she could to show me how simple it would be to just to jump out the next time through. After I threw my things out, we turned around in an empty parking lot and came back down. And then just before the car was almost stopped near the bookstore, for some reason I started screaming, now, now! Go ahead, Nita yelled. I can't, yee-yah, I screamed. You have to, she yelled, her voice rising with panic. Then just before I jumped, she accidentally hit the horn several times. We were both yelling and screaming. as I landed on my hands and knees in the gravel right beside my purse. It happened so slowly, I even closed the door as I was leaping out. Then suddenly it was quiet, and Nita sped off, raising a bit of dust and waving. "We did it," she yelled. I got up and brushed myself off. Then I realized that several people had gathered in the alley to investigate the noises. I was so embarrassed, yet I managed to walk away with one or two shreds of dignity. Later, they said that people thought we were being attacked in the alley. "Oh no," I said, "her car wouldn't stop, so I had to jump out when it was still moving." I could tell they just didn't understand. Thank you. Every time I read that, I can still see my boss standing there looking at me. This next poem is a poem in Navajo. There's various words to describe stages of relationships, and there's not really a word in Navajo, I think, that says that has the same connotations of being married as there is in English. But this is a poem called Ahitsuke, which is sort of comes close to that. It's about marriage. "It's not a grand thing after all, just that warm comfort and murmuring good night before I sink into that dark quiet that exists only when we're together. Otherwise, when I'm traveling, the same good night on the phone, and I listen intently for what, I'm not sure. Leave a light on for safety, drift off to sleep, half listening. A little noise and I'm sitting up in bed, surveying the room, sometimes even the entire block from the hotel window. I rush to the phone and double check. Should I dial 0 or 8911? I check the locks again, then lie back down, afraid to sleep, yet wanting to sleep, knowing that fatigue will be obvious in the morning. I've had so much practice. When we're together, checking locks doesn't occur to me. Local crime seems so far away, never mind that we are in the heart of the city. I insist upon complete darkness, and what I am sure of is that if I turn over, your warm chest or arms will surround me, that should I awaken, use as to where I am, once again, you will reach for me, knowing exactly how to reassure me. And when we drink coffee together in this bright California morning, mountains towering around us, I move closer to knowing what the Creator means by Nishanago Ahitsake. They are sitting beside each other in a house of beauty." And this next poem is, well, it's not actually a poem, it's pieces of a story. This is a book that just came out about a month ago. It's called Songs of Shiprock Fair. And it's about Shiprock Fair, obviously. And the little girl in the poem, in the story, its name is Nazba. And I'll read 4 pages from the story. 4 people that come from Shiprock, it's one of the biggest events that happened during the year. It's a combination of social events, academic events, sort of competitive agricultural events, as well as religious and spiritual kinds of rituals. So it's a time when a lot of people come home and take part in it. And so I'll read four pages from this. The artwork is really beautiful. It's by a young man named Emerson Chibigay, and really wonderful work. This is Nazba and her family. This is Nazba up here in the back of the pickup, and they're taking their agriculture, their produce to the fair to be entered in the exhibit. And here she is on the Ferris wheel, and there's the Carrizo Mountains way over there and the fairgrounds. Really wonderful work. This is the parade. There's a band there. They're wearing traditional clothes, and there's some Pueblo women carrying the pottery on their heads, and people are all watching the parade. And then they're all Navajos, but there's a couple over here that are tourists. So it's, you know, it's the real thing. And then there's also one of my favorite pages is this one. This is at the fair, and this is at the carnival, and there's people all dressed up in their best clothes, and grandmas are riding the Ferris wheel and eating cotton candy, and teenagers are hanging out, and it's just a really, really, really beautiful artwork. So the part that this first part is when they're getting ready to go to enter their deuce in the exhibit. Nazba and her family live in Shiprock, where everyone prepares for the fair each year. Children work on the art projects for the school contests. 4-H members groom their animals for the competitions. High school students finish sewing entries for the home economics exhibits. And school bands practice marching songs during the lunch period every day. As artists and jewelers put the final touches on their entries, they sing for each piece of jewelry or each painting. At various schools, parents, relatives, grandparents, and teachers work into the evenings building and decorating floats for the parade. Navajo songs drift from radios. Navajo songs from radios drift through the air as they talk and laugh. Throughout Shiprock, people prepare for the fair. Those who will sell food, jewelry, pottery, and other items set up their booths and tables alongside the roads. Music drifts through the air. People hope for a bit of rain so it won't be too dusty. The scents of fry bread, stew, and roasted mutton rise from outdoor grills. It makes everyone hungry. The smell of strong, fresh coffee mingles with the noises of passing cars, country music, sizzling fry bread, and children begging for candy. The whole town brims with excitement. It is almost time for the Shiprock Fair. And then this is when they're at the carnival. At the top of the Ferris wheel, Nazba shows her cousin sister the Shiprock Peak in the distance. In the cold moonlight, Shiprock is dark and large. They wave and shout, "Shema, my mother!" Long ago, Shiprock rescued the Navajos from floods. They wave and laugh in the clear night air as the Ferris wheel pauses above the fairgrounds. They see the long lines of car-like highways below. They see the small fires at the Yeviche. They see the thin, shiny river to the north, and above them is the bright harvest moon. Nazba and her sister laugh and wave as the Ferris wheel glides to the ground. And then this is when they're at the Yeviche. Whole families watch the Yei dance, and above them, the moon moves slowly across the clear, cold sky. They listen as the Yei sing the low, harmonious songs. They watch their evergreen branches sway back and forth. They watch the flames of the fire flicker as the Yei prays. They watch and know that the Yei have blessed them again. Nazba and her family sit and watch until the last Yei has danced. It is early morning. The moon is glowing in the west above the Carrizo Mountain. And then the last page is when finally she goes home early in the morning, and her father carries her into the house. This her father, carrying her into the house. The shiprock fair is over. The Yeyabiche have returned to their sacred home. The children are sleeping. They dream of parade candy, carnival rides, the Yeyi dancing. They dream of all their relatives being together. They are laughing and eating. Nazba is sleeping. She is smiling. She is dreaming of the next shiprock fair. I want to read this story, which is a combination of poetry and song, actually prose and song. It's a Navajo social song. It has English words in it. And you might be familiar with Vincent Gregg's song called Rita. This is Rita as a grown-up, and she's still at the trading post. So the title of this whole thing is called Far Away. It's the nice thing about Navajo songs, especially this kind, is that they're just a lot of fun and you can do all kinds of things with them. So there's four sections and they're interspersed with song. Rita was at the trading post waiting to have her check approved. She stood over to the side while people moved through the cashier's line. Then this guy came over after buying a bottle of Joy detergent. He said, smiling, "It's really sad to be alone, I found out. That's why I'm buying this, to wash my dishes alone." Rita was so startled, she just said, "Oh." After he went out, the cashier said, "Eh? Is that all you can say, all?" Rita and everyone in line laughed. When Rita came out of the trading post, that guy with the joy was gone. And then this is a little song, part of it that goes with it. Where trading post at? Where trading post at? Shikat ena shnel oweya, hey, yay, 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 yay. Far away, far away, yay, 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 yay. Shikat ena shnel oweya, hey, yay, 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 yay. The traffic is awful at Shiprock Fair. You have to park at 6 a.m. to get a decent spot for the parade. Most families have a traditional spot, and every year relatives and friends can find them there. Sometimes we sell coffee and pop from the back of the pickup, but usually we drink all the coffee ourselves and forget to pay. The kids get so excited, they try to dance with all the dance groups that come by. They catch candy from the various floats. When it's all over, they're sweaty, sticky with candy, and grouchy. So we pack up our chairs, blankets, bags of free stuff and candy, and ease into the long lines of traffic. No matter where we want to go, it's slow going. It's easier if the traffic officer is a relative. Then you can say, "Shawet, my baby, let me in." Then they'll stop cars and let you break into line. Once in traffic, a friend said, "Shiprock Fair is not the only one, you know. Tuba City Fair is better than this." We just all looked at her and thought, "Where Tuba City? Where Tuba City? Shigat enashne awaya, hey, yay, 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 yay. Far away, far away, yay, 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 yay. Shigat enashne awaya, hey, yay, 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 yay. When we were children, my mother always sat beside Daddy as he drove, sit together on the driver's side. He'd open the door for her and help her in. Daddy had a dog named Sandwich that he really liked. Sandwich followed him around everywhere and sat on the passenger side when they went places. Then one day, Sandwich leapt in before Mom and sat beside Daddy. After that happened three times, Mom said, "I'm not going anywhere with you if that dog sits in the middle." Daddy just smiled, then fixed Sandwich a special place in the back of the pickup. Later, Mom got in and looked around and said, "Where's that old dog? Where that old dog? Where that old dog? Shigashne away, hey, yay, 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 yay. Far away, far away, yay, 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 yay. Shigatanashne away, hey, yay, 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 yay." For once, they went dancing in Albuquerque. It was perfect, not too smoky, a live band playing, smooth, uncrowded floor, attentive waiters, and best of all, Leona's husband was a good dancer. They danced to almost every song except after fast swing numbers when they caught their breaths and sipped on cold, chill drinks. After midnight, he went to the men's room and Leona sat watching people. Then the band started playing Check Yes or No. "Oh, shoot, my favorite song," she thought. Just an open hand appeared requesting a dance. She glanced up and saw it belonged to a tall cowboy. "Eh?" "Please," he said, smiling. "No thanks," Leona replied. Suddenly, he fell to one knee and said, "Just one dance, please. I'm begging you." He was still smiling, partly at his own dramatic plea. Then the cowboy took his hat and cleared a wide path to the dance floor with a sweeping wave. She just smiled. Then he leaned over and whispered, "Remember, you broke my heart," and left. Where the dance at? Where the dance at? Shekat enashne away, hey, yay, 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 yay. Far away, far away, yay, 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 yay. Shekat enashne away, hey, yay, 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 yay. Far away, far away, yay, 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 yay. Shekat enashne. Away, yeah, hey, yeah, 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 hey, yeah. Thank you. That's one of those poems when you're reading it, you just keep feeling like saying, "Eh?" It's hard to read because you just feel like laughing yourself. This is a poem that I think I better read or else somebody will scold me afterwards. It's a poem that's been real popular. It's called Raisin Eyes. And it's a poem that's kind of, the poem itself is about Navajo men, but I think it's really a poem about men in general. Raisin Eyes. I saw my friend Ella with a tall cowboy at the store the other day in Shiprock. Later I asked her, "Who's that guy anyway?" "Oh, Lucy," she said. I knew what was coming. "It's terrible. He lives with me and my money and my car. But just for a while, He's in AI, RCA, and rodeos a lot, and I still work. This rodeo business is getting to me, you know, and I'm going to leave him because I think all this I'm doing now will pay off better somewhere else. But I stay with him, and it's hard because he just smiles that way, you know. And then I end up paying entry fees and putting shiny Tony Llamas on layaway again. It's not hard, but he doesn't know when I'll leave him, and I'll drive across the flat desert from Red Valley and blue morning light straight to Shiprock so easily. And anyway, my car is already used to humming a morning song with Gary Stewart complaining again of aching and breaking down and out love affairs. Damn, these Navajo cowboys with raisin eyes and pointed boots are just bad news. But it's so hard to remember that all the time, she said with a little laugh. Thank you. This is another poem that's in fixed form. It's a villanelle, which is 19 lines, and there's three lines that are repeating in each of the stanzas. It's called Near to the Water. And again, this is a poem that combines Navajo and English. It's an old French form, traditional French form. Most afternoons at least, when the sky is a brilliant teal, Hanapa is at the sunlit stove tending the speckled enamel pot. The Hagan is redolent of simmering soup and cornmeal. As a child, Hanapa learned to blend the fine cornmeal in the still mountain mornings. The quiet cadence of the stirring spoon brought forth her mother's voice on those afternoons when the sky was a brilliant teal. Later, when Tuahane saw the red sunset, bread, simmering stew, and blue cornmeal. On quiet, cold nights, the elders tell of how a woman's long hair reveals enduring wisdom. They say changing woman's hair averted drought on a dusty, hot afternoon centuries ago when the sky was a brilliant teal. For Tuahane, the glistening of Hanaba's hair recall the low peal of distant thunder when thin corn stalks ripple in dry fields and sought cool rain. Now the Hagan is redolent of simmering soup and blue cornmeal as Hanaba stirs the enamel pot in the low winter dusk. Her songs yield memories of Tuahane, his resonant voice, his dark eyes. The decades have taught Hanapa that those long ago afternoons when the skies were a brilliant teal, ensured their children would thrive on old stories, simmering soup, and blue cornmeal. I really wanted to do something. My father really liked blue corn fixed in any form, and in the years before he passed on, that was a meal that he had every day, three times a day. And so I sort of wanted to do something for him. I'm just going to read two more poems. This is a poem called 1864. It's about a period of Navajo history that's very familiar to Navajo people, but for many non-Navajos, it's a period that many people are just learning about or have not heard about. It's a poem that's told in three voices. It's a time when Navajo people were over 8,000 Navajo people were forced to march over 300 miles to Bosque Redondo in southwest New Mexico, and they were held there for 4 years. In the poem, I refer to the Netka, which means Navajo country. It also means homeland of the Navajos. And Bosque Redondo was the name for Fort Sumner. And Kit Carson was named Redshirt Navajo. Etlachi and Huelte is also the Navajo name for Fort Sumner. While the younger daughter slept, she dreamt of mountains, the wide blue sky above, and friends laughing. We talked as the day wore on. The stories and highway beneath became a steady hum. The center lines were a blurred guide. As we neared the turn to Fort Sumner, I remembered this story. A few winters ago, he worked as an electrician on a crew installing power lines on the western plains of New Mexico. He stayed in his camper, which was connected to a generator. The crew parked their trucks together and built a fire in the center. The nights were cold and there weren't any trees to break the wind. It snowed off and on, a quiet, still blanket. The land was like he had imagined from the old stories, flat and dotted with shrubs. The arroyos and washes cut through the soft dirt. They were unsuspectingly deep. During the day, the work was hard and the men were exhausted. In the evening, some went into the nearby town to eat and drink a few beers. He fixed a small meal for himself and tried to relax. Then at night, he heard cries and moans carried by the wind and blowing snow. He heard the voices wavering and rising in the darkness. He would turn over and pray, remembering songs, humming songs he remembered from his childhood. The songs returned to him as easily as if he had heard them every afternoon. He sang for himself, his family, and the people whose spirits lingered on the plains, in the arroyas, and in the old windswept plants. No one else heard the thin wailing. After the third night, he unhooked his camper, signed his time card, and started the drive north to home. He told the guys, "Sure, the money's good, but I miss my kids, and it sure gets lonely out here for a family man." He couldn't stay there any longer. The place contained the pain and cries of his relatives, the confused and battered spirits of his own existence. After we stopped for a Coke and chips, the storytelling resumed. My great aunt always started the story saying, "You are here because of what happened to your great grandmother long ago." They began rounding up the people in the fall. Some were lured into surrendering by offers of clothes and livestock. So many of us were starving and suffering that year because the Baloganas kept attacking us. Kit Carson and his army had burned all the fields, and they killed our sheep right in front of us. We couldn't believe it. I covered my face and cried. All my life, we had sheep. They were like our family. It was then I knew our lives were in great danger. We were all so afraid of that man, Redshirt, and his army. Some people hid in the foothills of the Chaska Mountains and in Canyon de Chelly. Our family talked it over, and we decided to go to this place. What would our lives be like without sheep, crops, and land? At least we thought we would be safe from gunfire and our family would not starve. The journey began and the soldiers all around us. All of us walked. Some carried babies. Little children and the elderly stayed in the middle of the group. We walked steadily each day, stopping only when the soldiers wanted to eat or rest. We talked among ourselves and cried quietly. We didn't know how far it was or even where we were going. All that was certain was that we were leaving the Netka, our home. As the days went by, we grew more tired, and soon the journey was difficult for all of us, even the military, and it was they who thought all this up. We had such a long distance to cover. Some old people fell behind, and they wouldn't let us go back to help them. It was the saddest thing to see. My heart hurt so to remember that. Two women were near the time of the births of their babies, and they had a hard time keeping up with the rest. Some army men pulled them behind a huge rock, and we screamed out loud when we heard the gunshots. The women didn't make a sound, but we cried out loud for them and their babies. I felt then I would not live through everything. When we crossed the Rio Grande, many people drowned. We didn't know how to swim. There was hardly any water deep enough to swim in at home. Some babies, children, and some of the older men and women were swept away by the river current. We must not ever forget their screams and the last we saw of them, hands, a leg, or strands of hair floating. There were many who died on the way to Huelta. All the way, we told each other, we will be strong as long as we are together. I think that was what kept us alive. We believed in ourselves and the old stories that the holy people had given us. This is why, she would say to us, this is why we are here, because our grandparents prayed and grieved for us. The car hums steadily, and my daughter is crying softly. Tears stream down her face. She cannot speak. Then I tell her it was at Bosque Redondo. The people learned to use flour, and now fry bread is considered to be the traditional Navajo bread. It was there we acquired a deep appreciation for strong coffee. The women began to make long tiered calico skirts and fine velvet shirts for the men. They decorated their dark velvet blouses with silver dimes, nickels, and quarters. They had no use for money then. It is always something to see silver flashing in the sun against dark velvet and black, black hair. This is a poem that's always difficult to read, but I think it's a poem that's important, not just for Navajo people, but for all of us. I think in all of our histories, we have similar stories of strength and survival. There's one more poem that I should read, and it has to do with coffee, which I mentioned in the previous poem. This is a poem that's been popular. It's called Hills Brothers Coffee. My uncle is a small man. In Navajo, we call him Shidai, my mother's brother. He doesn't know English, but his in the white way is Tom Jim. He lives about a mile or so down the road from our house. One morning, he sat in the kitchen drinking coffee. I just came over, he said. The store is where I'm going to. He tells me about how my mother seems to be gone every time he comes over. Maybe she sees me coming, then runs and jumps in her car and speeds away, he says, smiling. We both laugh just to think of my mother jumping in her car and speeding. I pour him more coffee, and he spoons in sugar and cream until it looks almost like a chocolate shake. Then he sees the coffee can. Oh, that's that coffee with the man in a dress. like a church man. Oh, that one that does it for me. Very good coffee. I sit down again and he tells me, some coffee has no kick, but this one is the one. It does it good for me. I pour us both a cup, and while we wait for my mother, his eyes crinkle with a smile, and he says, yes, oh yes, this is the very one, putting in more sugar and cream. So I usually buy Hills Brothers coffee once or sometimes twice a day. I drink a hot coffee and it sure does it for me. I'll end with this one. This is a poem called Shitsui, which is, means my daughter's child, and I think it's a good way to end the evening, as our grandchildren are the future and are just like shimmering lights, shimmering beauty for all of us who are grandparents. And for this is for Brianna, who's my middle grandchild. And I have a little grandson who's a year and a half. His name's Isaiah Tsetka. And then Chamisa Ba is 8, and Brianna Nasba is 6 years old. It's called Shitsui. She was born on a bright fall afternoon, already chubby and quivering with wetness. She gasped for air and for her mother's warm body. Her name is She Who Brings Happiness. Because upon being carried, she instinctively settles to the warmth of your shoulder and neck. She nestles like a little bird into the contours of your body. All you can say is, she's so sweet, I don't know what to do. And we smile, beaming with pleasure. She sleeps, even breaths and milky sighs just below your ear. Other times she snuggles into you and watches with bright dark eyes. It feels so much like the trust we have somehow forgotten over the years. All you can do is kiss her warm forehead and say, she's so sweet, I don't know what to do. Sometimes when I haven't seen her for a day or even a week, she runs to me, her arms straight out for balance, and hugs my legs. My gamma, she murmurs into my skirt. Then she holds her arms up and says, and her up. She snuggles into me, sighing. Then I tell her, my little one, my daughter's child, what happiness you are to me. She cries a little, like the infant she no longer is. And I hold her like the sweet surprise she will always be. We sit like that a while, then she hums, hey, Naya. I take the hint and sing the old lullaby her great-grandmother sang to the child I once was. And this is the little refrain. Hey, Neyanga, hey, Oya, hey, Neyanga, hey, Oya, hey, Neyanga, hey, Oya, hey, hey, Yanga, hey, Oya, hey, hey, Yanga, Oya, hey, Neyanga, Oya, Oya, hey, Neyanga, hey, Oya, hey, Neyanga, hey, Oya, hey, Neyanga, hey, Oya, hey, hey, Yanga. Hey, Oya, hey, hey, Yanga. Oya, hey, Nay, Yanga. Oya, hey, Nay, Yanga. Hey, ya. She shifts on my lap, saying, star, star. We turn to the twinkling Christmas lights, still up in July, and sing, twinkle, twinkle, little star. She falls asleep and I hand her to her mother saying, she's so sweet, I don't know what to do. Now each time she toddles into the room, we turn and say, "Ashinet, Xiaxie, you want some juice? How about milk?" She who brings happiness smiles and climbs onto the nearest lap. As she snuggles comfortably into the circle around the table, we murmur, "She's so sweet, we don't know what to do." Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.